look at your secondary now, with Dawkins going to be out, Goodman's still out. How are those young guys coming along? What's it like when you look out there sometimes at practice and you see Kyle and Saquon and all those guys out there together?
Cassius, Parrish. I tell you, they're it's a very good group for a young group. And I think there's a lot of things that go into secondary play and being able to play competitively in the secondary earlier in your career. Number one is being smart enough to handle all the adjustments and understanding how we're going to try to play our coverage schemes against different teams. And to their credit, that's not what's, you know, holding them back from being on the field. And I think that's always the first hurdle you get, you know, you get into is can they actually handle the defense? And those guys have been able to handle it. We had to throw Kyle in the middle of the game in a couple different situations, a couple different positions. He handled those fine. Saquon's played safety, star, corner. Cassius has played corner in games, and Parrish has played a lot during the course of the year. So, you know, it's never going to be perfect when you got that many young guys out there playing that many snaps. But I think that overall as a group, and again, I'll throw David Bruton and Darcell in there. And, you know, we got a lot of young guys that are still maybe just in their second year, too, still haven't played a lot of defense. But I think as a group, they're getting better, and they're competitive, and they work hard, and they got a great group to learn from. And they've really soaked all that in.
Well, none of those guys, with the exception of maybe Darcell, were really high picks, a couple of them undrafted.
Yeah.
Has there been a key to them, a common thread amongst them, why you liked these guys?
Yeah.
Them in the first
place? They played a lot of football. You know, and when you have players that have started a lot of games at, you know, big schools, and, you know, like Saquon, I think, was 52 games he started, you know, and Parrish, you know, played a bunch, and Kyle the same thing, Bruton. When you're taking a player that has played at a big university, or, you know, played a ton of football, you know at least he's going to be able to function out there, and he gives you an opportunity to help, you know, help him get better. And then he's got a foundation to build on. And I think that, again, the big common theme with all of them is they've been able to mentally handle what we wanted them to do. And whenever you're a backup player in a secondary, you can't just learn one spot. You got to be able to play corner. You got to be able to play nickelback. You might have to play safety. Nate Jones has played everything. So, you know, we're kind of cross-training them, and you can't do that unless mentally they can handle that burden.
What do you see in the dynamics of that group? Because you've got a bunch of guys in their 30s and then a bunch of guys in, like, their early 20s, and not a whole lot.
It's like fathers and sons playing out there. You know, and they kind of they get a kick out of that. I think that that's great for the young guys in terms of learning how to be a pro, learning how to study, learning how to prepare, and then also being able to get the communication from some of those older guys when they're on the field with them. You know, we've never had just the young group out there at the same time. You know, I don't think that would be great for anybody. But I think that when they're out there with, you know, two or three other veteran players, those guys always help the younger players get into position. We've got a lot of distractions today now. And so, you know, I think that there's, you know, and one of the things we saw early in training camp was that our veteran players had trust and faith in the young players because of the way they worked. So they saw that they were serious about trying to help us, you know, compete and win. And I think that that's a big thing for the veteran players, because they need to trust those young players when they're on the field with them.
You look at Dwayne Bowe, you know, a lot of people in Kansas City thought he was underachieving there for a while, and then all of a sudden, about midway through this year, just exploded. What have you seen on film as the difference between his play now to, say, last year?
Well, I think he's always been an explosive player. He's always had great size, great hands. And I think that, you know, again, sometimes people want things to happen so fast, and there's a lot of factors that go into being a very productive receiver or very productive pass rusher. There's a lot of different things that players go through, and their teams and the way that they're built and set up, I think, have an impact on their individual success. He's been patient. He's done what they've asked him to do, and now they're asking him to do a ton. They're moving him around a lot. They find ways to get him the ball because like many top receivers, now people are doing a lot of things to try to take him away. The difficult part about that is if you're trying to double team a receiver and stop the running game, you can run into a lot of problems. So you got to kind of pick your poison and try to, you know, sometimes you're guessing. Sometimes you're playing pass and they run it and you get burned and vice versa. But I think his development, I mean, he's always been physically very gifted. He's got, you know, he's had a lot of opportunities, and Castle and he, I think, have really found a great rhythm together. And I always will be a believer that any receiver or quarterback that's having a really good year has got a compliment, either throwing it to him or catching. And in their case, I think the two of them have really, you know, this is as good a tandem as we're going to play.
Also, so in those instances where it's difficult to double team a receiver, and it's good to have someone like Champ then?
Yeah, you put them, you know, you put your best guys on their best guys a lot of times, and you go, you know, and sometimes you gotta let that happen and let it play out. Other times, you can't do that the whole game though. If you do that the whole game and tell them what you're doing all the time, you know, I know that the coordinator's too good, and then the scheme is too good. They'll find a way to hurt you in another direction.
Over the years. Three toughest places to play.
You're asking me or you're telling me? A lot of times you tell me things.
No, I'm asking.
I want to know what you're thinking. Go ahead.
You know, I got, you know, there's Arrowhead in December. There's maybe Miami in September. There's, you know, I would think altitude in Denver would be a home field advantage, you know. But in your experience, they talk about Seattle with the 12th man. Uh-huh. I've got ideas, but I wanted you to say it first.
Are you talking about three, the noise, just the noise, or are you talking about everything in general?
Everything in general, like, is there something around the league that people talk about that this is the toughest place to play?
I definitely put Arrowhead in that class, in the top, because it for an outdoor stadium, I mean, it's the noise is at times, I mean, you know, it's hard to function, particularly on offense. You know, you're certainly going to use the silent count and those kind of things. I think that gives them a big advantage, huge home field advantage in that regard. I always thought that the old Indianapolis Stadium, because it was kind of right on top of you and the noise just kind of bounced off the walls, and, you know, that was a very difficult place to, you know, hear and all that. And then it was like it was a hush when they had the ball. You know, you could hear him whisper. And then when you had the ball, it was incredibly noisy. The Meadowlands was always a different crowd between the Jets and the Giants. You know, but I enjoyed playing there, but it wasn't an easy, you know, you felt like you're on a stage, but at the same time, the crowd was very hostile, and you know, all of those places I think are kind of stick out in my mind.
Jets a little more hostile.
We played the Jets a lot more, yeah. So yeah, I'd say different crowd.
Josh, you talked last game about, you know, the difficulty of your offense to keep up with what your defense had been yielding. Do you get any more involved with your defensive game plan right now that you're giving up yards and points like you have been last year?
I think we've really kind of stayed, you know, for the most part, consistent in terms of our approach with game planning, and that kind of goes, you know, in all three phases. The each side of the ball kind of goes through their own preparation, scouting report, and ideas, and comes up with their beliefs on the game plan, and then we just kind of meet, and then we marry ours together. If there's anything that I thought might, you know, give us a better opportunity to do something effective, then, you know, we might take a look at that. If something that I thought would be productive, they have reasons why it's not going to be productive, then we kind of go, you know, with the best of both worlds, really. I know that the inclination sometimes when things haven't gone well is to press and change and do those kind of things. But I think that, you know, sometimes you got to look at the whole, and maybe we got to do a few things better, you know, and maybe we can tweak a few things or use a few calls, you know, less than what we've used them or more than what we've used them. And I think that's the way that all game planning generally goes. And we've kind of, you know, we've stayed consistent with that. We're always trying to find the best formula to win each week.
Hey, Josh, the sad details about Kenny McKinley's story came out yesterday.
Yeah.
Do teams owe any greater obligation to players they know are in significant trouble in some area off the football field?
You know, with respect to his family, I'm not going to comment on that whole situation. I respect your question and appreciate it, but I'm not going to go into commenting on that. And I know, you know, we've had, you know, a long grieving process here. I know his family has too, and I'm just going to kind of keep it at that.
Last question, Lindsay.
Who would you say right now is the face of this franchise, and who is there one, and who do you maybe see that being going forward? And is that an important concept to have somebody as the face?
I think that if you do have that, you know, I think it kind of shows itself, that person, whoever that may be. And in our situation, you know, I think that's up for your opinion. If you think that there's somebody that is the case, then that's, you know, that can be it. But I think that we don't really decide that as an organization. I don't think any organization necessarily comes in and says, all right, we're going to force this person into that role. You know, sometimes it's a coach, sometimes it's a player. A lot of times it's a quarterback, sometimes it's a middle linebacker, but I think it can be different at different places. And I think that kind of usually takes care of itself.
Could it be 10 long term?
I don't know. We'll see.